Good morning. I'd like to call the House Education Committee to order. Today is Monday, March 27, 2023. Let the record reflect that it's 8:03. Today we have present Representative Prox, Representative McKay, Representative Himshute, Representative Story, my co-chair, Representative Ruffridge, and myself, Representative Allard. I'd like to remind everybody in the committee members and those in the audience to silence your and turn off your cell phones. The staff that will be assisting us today are Linda with the House Records, Kelsey with LIO, and Lindy Causer with the House Committee Aid. We have two items on today's agenda. The committee will hear HB 21, School University Employee Health Insurance, sponsored by Vance, Representative Vance, and the presentation from the University of Alaska, presented by Pat Pitney. And I'm going to take a brief at ease. Okay, call the Education Committee to order. This is the second hearing of House Bill 21. Today, the committee will hear from the bill's sponsor and give the opportunity for amendments, open and close public testimony, and then ask for the will of the committee. So I'd like to invite Representative Vance and her staffer, Jake Alameda, to the table. Please place your names on the record and provide us with a brief overview of your bill. You may begin, Representative Vance.
Good morning. This is Representative Sarah Vance of House District 6. Good Monday morning to all of you. House Bill 21, School Healthcare Consolidation, is a bill that optionally allows the school districts, municipalities, and the University of Alaska the option to participate in Alaska Care, state healthcare program. All in all, that's what the bill does. And it has the potential to save school districts millions of dollars in healthcare and provide them more healthcare options.
Representative Vance, thank you very much. Are there any questions from the committee? Representative Ruffridge, please, and then Representative Story after.
Thank you, Chair Allard. So I've tried to take a little bit of time to look into this bill, and I'm very interested in trying to save on healthcare costs anywhere that we can. Can you describe a little bit what the process is to save millions? And I guess if there is so I was reading through the zero fiscal note from before, and the University of Alaska indicated that they may not join it and because there may not be savings to either the state or to the university. But then we do have a letter of support from our own school district, to support it and thinking that there may be savings. But I haven't been able to tie actual figures in about what that savings looks like from a district. Is that something you can talk to?
Co-Chair Ruffridge, thank you for the question. The savings comes from pooling larger numbers of people together. And for some school districts like ours, it's simply the option of having a healthcare program who will accept them. And being a part of a larger pool allows us to take on people and hopefully be able to provide that option where some are having a challenge in the market of obtaining a comparable healthcare plan. That's the situation with our own school district. With Matsu, for instance, who provided testimony, they compared their premiums to our premiums and calculated the potential of saving about $3,000 per employee based upon what they have previously paid and I believe our 2019 numbers for the Alaska Care Program. So they're comparing their cost with their current plan to what ours would be. And what I was told by the administration a number of years ago is that the more people that pull in, eventually we would start to see that number of overall costs per employee go down.
Just follow up?
Yes, briefly. Please go
thank
ahead.
Thank you. Thank you for that answer. So just the follow up to that is it's $3,000 per year in the MATSU. What is that?
Through the chair, I believe so.
Okay. All right. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Representative Story. You had a question?
Yes, thank you, Chair Allard. Through the chair, welcome, Rep. Vance. I really like the idea of this bill. It says that we'll have the impact requires an actuarial analysis and will be discussed in a separate fiscal note. Is that to happen in finance if this bill, when this bill moves out?
Through the chair, Representative Story, I believe so. And with the current fiscal note from the Department of Administration, that is one that I'm having conversations about, of if those costs reflect the actual work that is anticipated, because the first year upon passage of the bill is simply adopting regulations. And so it is my belief that we won't need as many additional employees in the Department of Administration at that time. During that first year of regulation, it will give the state an opportunity to investigate if school districts, how many municipalities may want to join, and then see how many additional employees are actually needed based upon the interest.
Follow up?
Yes, go ahead, Representative Story.
Thank you for that information through the chair, Rep. Vance. Do you have any idea of how many school districts have said that they are interested in doing this?
Through the chair, Representative Story, we know Mat-Su School District, which is the second largest, is interested. I believe Kenai Peninsula Borough is the third largest. They are very much interested. We've heard from the city of Ketchikan. We've been receiving other calls from smaller villages. And I apologize if I don't have a longer list, but we have had requests for how to do sample letters of support from some of the smaller communities because this may be a better option for them.
Thank you.
Thank you. Are there any other questions from the committee? Representative Prox.
Yes, thank you through the chair. I guess this is more of a finance committee question, but this is an opt-in plan. So whether it works, and roughly it transfers the cost from one pocket to the other. And in insurance, you have what's called adverse selection risk. And with this, a potential problem with this is that currently districts that think they are paying less than the comparable state plan will not join, and those that think they are paying more will join. That, from the total perspective of the state, is a risk. Is that being analyzed, or is that what comes in the Finance Committee?
Through the chair, Representative Prox, I have no idea. That may be a question for the Department of Administration of how they would come to that conclusion.
Okay.
Follow up?
Nope, I think not. I think okay. It is all numbers.
Yeah. Is there any other questions from the committee? Thank you, Representative Vance. I do have a question. I'm a little bit concerned about the fiscal note. The reason why is because we had a fiscal note that was zero. And then all of a sudden we don't. And it's concerning that the Department of Administration just flipped everything on its head. And I thought your bill was very sound coming before us originally. It made sense about the fiscal note being zero, as that we've had several committees with the departments testifying that they're not going to have to add staff. In fact, we've had more than this in front of us. And so I'm careful to say, but I find it could be a political move, and I don't much appreciate it. And I love your fiscal note with the zero, but for them to come back with a 327, was it million or thousand on it? Is it 327,000? Just seems ludicrous. So do you have any comments on the change? It's almost like they want to kill your bill.
Thank you.
Can you help me with that?
Thank you, Co-Chair Allard. Like I mentioned previously, I anticipate that we would likely see the need for an additional employee or two, depending on the level of involvement from the state, whether it's municipalities or school districts, and the workload that the administration will undergo with taking on more healthcare. So at this time, since the first year is only adopting regulation, I don't agree with the current numbers of this fiscal note, although do I anticipate one on some level. But it's hard for me to say what that workload would look like at this point. I do know that this particular bill, a version of it which required all school districts to consolidate that without an option, was offered by previous Senator Dunleavy. So I know the concept is one that the administration supports, and there's been greater support since it is now clearly optional. However, I do not understand the reflection of this fiscal note.
Thank you. Me neither. Thank you. So seeing no other comments, Representative Ruffridge, go ahead, please.
Thank you, Chair Allard. And through the chair, just for the record, and please correct me if I'm wrong, this is not a change in a fiscal note. This is just two separate fiscal notes. One is from the university system, and that was the previous zero fiscal note, and it's zero because they don't plan on participating. The current fiscal note, or the additional fiscal note, is from the Department of Administration, Retirement, and Benefits, and that is for the additional potential individuals hired. Is that correct?
Co-Chair Ruffridge, that is the Department of Administration. Yes, that would be for administering the program. But I do not recall if it when we received that fiscal note.
Thank you. And just to follow up, if I may. So the zero fiscal note is still accurate. There is a zero fiscal note and, in addition to that, a fiscal note that adds potential positions.
The university is zero, yes. And for the record, the previous 4 years ago, I introduced this bill, but it never received a hearing. And so it never received a fiscal note. And so I'm unclear as to what it would have been at that time if we would have seen any change. I know that in other committees we've seen increases in fiscal notes that were kind of hard to explain. And I think that's why there's consternation about fiscal notes this year, is that we're not seeing a rhyme or reason for it. But with this one, I think having a conversation as to when the bill would be implemented per the requirements of the bill would be an opportunity for a conversation.
Thank you. Are there any other comments, questions? And thank you for that and your response, because I'm very concerned that there seems to be an imbalance on fiscal notes depending on what bill it is. So that definitely has to be addressed through the Department of Administration, and that is why I brought it up. So is there any amendments? Okay, seeing none. The amendment deadline for HB 21 was set for Monday, March 20th, 2023. Our office did not receive any other amendments. Does anyone on the committee have an amendment they would like to offer right now? No. Seeing none, we will open for public testimony on House Bill 21. Is there anyone wishing to testify that is in the room currently? Is there anyone online? Are we looking at Nathan? Okay, Mr. Erforth, I think I said it correctly. Would you like to testify?
I would love to, and you did say it correctly. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Go ahead.
All right. Good morning. For the record, my name is Nathan Erforth, and I'm the president of the Kenai Peninsula Education Association. I'm calling in favor of HB 21, and I thank Representative Vance for her work on it, as well as the co-chairs and the committee for hearing it. Healthcare in the state of Alaska is a uniquely awful expense. We spend more on healthcare here than just about anyone else in the nation. Many actions should be taken to address this problem, but in the meantime, one necessary action is allowing school districts the option of joining a larger pool. KPBSD has investigated moving to other pools a few times now over the years. PEHT has been unable to take us, and private healthcare insurers have not provided viable options. As the superintendent's letter to you states, these costs continue to cut into the district's overall budget. We've had support staff in our district that are at risk of owing the district a check at the end of the month because our health plan has been so expensive versus how much they're paid. We have educators who have left to other districts specifically because of the healthcare premiums, which are ever increasing due to the constantly increasing healthcare costs. Our healthcare plan, in an attempt to save money, has become so complex that the only way most people can figure out how to navigate it is to call the employee benefits manager and ask. We need healthcare costs to not negatively impact instructional funding as much as they do. Some of our school districts have other options. For districts like ours, the other options won't take us, and the current plan is untenable. I also understand the adverse selection risk and fiscal note concerns, but I have to say that if the state wants quality education and educators for its students, we need to be willing to support districts in this condition as a state and not let them languish. So I am hoping that we can work on some problem solving on this and make it happen. Thank you all very much. Have a great day.
Thank you, Mr. Erfurth. We appreciate your testimony. And the next is Ms. Kathy Leary. Ms. Leary, are you on the line, please?
Yes, I am. Thank you.
Go ahead, please.
Yes, for the record, my name is Kathy Leary. I'm the city administrator in Gustavus, Alaska. We're a small city with 6 or 7 employees, depending on the season. We currently provide health insurance to anybody who works 30 hours or more a week. But the plan is not a very good plan, but it's one we can afford. And it only covers the employee. It doesn't cover employee and family because that's cost prohibitive for a town our size. And so when I saw this, I got a little bit excited because I thought, well, maybe, you know, if the municipalities could join this, then we would be able to offer something better for employees and prospective employees. We just lost our clerk of 5 years to the National Park Service because they provide insurance for employee and family. So I'm excited to hear that this might be something that could be put into place at some point. One thing I wanted to ask about or find out about was if it was regulatory or once the regulations were done, that there isn't a minimum number of people who could join the pool. So because sometimes we might only have 3 people out of the 6 or 7 who need the insurance. So I'm in support of this bill, and I'd love to see it benefit small or large municipalities, however that works. But something needs to be done to keep and retain employees, and this is a big issue with us being able to keep and retain employees. So I support this bill, and I support it for the smallest of a pool of employees. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Leary. We appreciate your testimony. Is there anybody else online? Okay, Ms. Miller, are you ready to testify?
Hi, my name is Candy Miller. I'm from the Mat-Su Valley, and I have not read the bill. I've been listening to the testimony. Because of my husband's and my experience, and we're not employed by any education. That's not our field. We're actually grandparents, and we're semi-retired or retired. But when we checked into various healthcare about 7 years ago, when our friend told us of some other alternative healthcare options, we did the math switch to a healthcare that we literally saved $8,000 a year. And at the highest level of that that company that we went with, healthcare, for one person, it was $2,000 a year. So my husband and I together at the maximum level, were paying $4,000 a year. And then I started telling this to other people, and I found out that one teacher's health insurance, this is 7, 8 years ago, was, I believe it was $22,000 a year in the Mat-Su Valley, and about $24,000 a year in Kenai area. And then I found out that the nurses were paying about the same amount just for one nurse, you know, one nurse or one teacher, and that didn't include their family or children. And so I was, my interest in this healthcare aspect is having the money follow the individual, and they could choose where they direct their, you know, do the math and where they would get their healthcare, that it wouldn't have to be only through the whatever the health care that the state has or the school districts have. So that's my – and the aspect, personally, I think the budget could be majorly changed just by having the money going to the individual teacher. I'm repeating myself. But thank you for all that you're doing and however this might fit into the health care plans for teachers. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Miller. And she was calling in for the Mattsu Valley. I apologize for not mentioning that. Okay. Is there anybody else on the line, Kelsey? Thank you. Seeing none, we will – oh, let's see. Well, I will now be closing public testimony. Are there any other further questions from the committee members? Representative Story, please.
Thank you, Chair Allard. Through the chair, Rep. Vance, one of the public testifiers had asked if there would be a limit on, a municipality had to have a certain number of employees before they could join. And my understanding would be, since it's open to everyone and the idea is to get more in the pool, that there wouldn't be a limit, that it would be those who decided to join could join. Is that correct?
Through the chair, Representative Story, that is correct. The there is no minimum threshold the way the bill is written. I believe the proper thing to do for municipalities and school districts would be to have a conversation with the Department of Administration about the cost benefit and what that individual expense would be. But that is the hope, is that we can provide relief and consolidate our efforts in providing great health care across the state.
Follow-up?
Yes, follow-up. And as far as the fiscal note, I can understand where you're thinking about the – through the chair. I can understand where you're thinking about the first year not being as expensive, but it seems that you understand why future years would be more expensive because we potentially be adding many people to the pool and many more people have to process claims and things like that.
Through the chair, Representative Story, yes, that is accurate. And I think it would be difficult to know how many additional employees at this point until we know what the additional burden is on being able to onboard various school districts and municipalities. But I do anticipate additional cost. And as the testifier from the Kenai Peninsula mentioned, I think it is one of those cost benefit savings that we will see a cost for those additional employees, but overall it will reduce the pressure off the education budget, which I believe would save us a lot of money in the end.
Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Ruffridge.
Thank you, Chair Allard. Through the chair, this is brought up, that testifier brought up sort of a thought for me is that the state can't say no to an individual or an area, right? If they're, let's say they say we want to join and the Division of Retirement and Benefits looks at the group and says, uh-oh, that group's going to be expensive. They have to allow, if the district says we want in, the state has to say yes with this bill. Is that accurate?
Through the chair, or co-chair Ruffridge, that is correct. And on page 5 of the bill, it states, if a school employer makes the election, the commissioner of administration shall select either a policy of group insurance under AS39.30.090 that covers the state employees and school employees, or a policy of self-insurance provided by the Department of Administration that provides insurance coverage to state employees and school employees. So it allows the Department of Administration flexibility that to determine what is best for both parties involved, whether that's joining with a larger pool or having their own self-insurance policy. It, in the end, it still relieves those school districts or municipalities from the burden of having to go and shop for healthcare themselves. But as the bill is written, we would accept everyone who came to us and have that conversation of the cost benefit.
Thank you. And just a follow-up to that, if I may.
please.
The caller mentioned some dollar amounts per year for different plans for these districts. And I think you had that as a part of your presentation before, but can you remind me what the cost per person is for our state plan currently per year?
Co-Chair Rufford, you're really testing my knowledge on this, and I do not have those numbers, but if I could phone a friend if we have the Department of Administration on.
I don't know that we do. We do not. Would you like to take a brief at ease and we could get them on the line?
Co-Chair Allard, I think that would be up to Co-Chair Rufford if he needs that information right now. What I can tell you is that I have been a beneficiary. I have had both the Kenai Peninsula School District health care, and I'm currently on the state health care plan. And 2 years ago, before we saw the spike in the Kenai Peninsula Borough School District's rates, my husband and I were having the conversation of what health care plan we should subscribe to. And I asked him, is there any big difference in this decision? And he said, no, not really. He had taken a look at both health care plans and the cost of both, and it was a nominal difference. I mean, it was very, very small. And he was asking me, do you have a preference? And I said, not really. Potato, potato. And for some reason, we chose to go with the state health care plan. But it showed me that it was very comparable in its benefits and its cost to us as a family. Every year we have our families covered on it. Although we are not high users, it was a very similar plan in what it offered and in coverage. So I don't know if that helps provide an answer, a little bit of a picture of what the state health care plan offers in comparison.
Yeah, thank you for that. And I think from a personal perspective, you offer some very good insight into what it looks like from a boots on the ground approach. What is it like to have either or from a district or from the state? But the question I think that needs to be answered for this bill is, what is the cost that you don't see? So, because the district does have a specific cost per person, and you know the testifier had mentioned what that is approximately. And I am interested to note what the state's actual cost is per person, because I think that's where we would find what that savings amount is. And it's not, it would just be something I think we can follow up on later, would be fine. But that would be an important piece for me.
Co-Chair Ruffridge, the other thing to mention, if I may.
Yes, please.
Is the bill also indicates that on page 7, that the specifications will be made available at least once every 5 years in the lowest responsible bid submitted by an insurance carrier. So the state is going to look at the best healthcare option every 5 years, as do our school districts and municipalities. And as we know, healthcare is a fluctuating number. So this is going to be an ongoing conversation to see what the best cost benefit is. And so it's challenging, while just like within our own school district on the Kenai Peninsula, when I first offered this bill 4 years ago, everything was great. They had great healthcare plan. The cost benefit was wonderful for the employees. But this last year, when I was at the school board, they were clearly saying, we are losing teachers because the cost of the premiums is so high. We need to do something. And that's when I said, hey, there could be a better option. And it showed me just how volatile our healthcare cost is in the state. And this is just one lever. So while we may have numbers this year, it could look very different next year. And that's why I'm hoping that just having an option available will be a good path forward.
Yes, thank you.
Thank you. Representative Hemshut, did you have a question?
I have two questions,
please.
I think. Okay, my first question through the chair. I don't think you've made any changes that would address this, but governmental unit, what might that include? It's defined, I've lost where I was looking at the definition, but it was you know, North Pacific Fisheries Management Council, university, and other government units?
Through the chair, Representative Hemshoot, governmental units include our municipalities and boroughs as well, and those other entities that are listed as defined by statute.
Okay.
Did you have a follow-up or an additional question?
An additional question.
Continue.
Thank you, through the chair. This is a long bill, and so this could be in here, but just to be clear, is it addressed in this bill if a school district opts into the state pool? What happens with the payout? Sometimes claims come in 3 months or 6 months later. Is that addressed in this bill, how that would be covered, that transition period?
Through the chair, Representative Hemshoot, you'll have to give me a moment. I'm looking for that as well.
Something about the closing balance of that reserve will be transferred to the group health and life benefits.
Yes, Representative Hemshoot, under the title transition, It says that that the claims transfer that closing balance into the group health and life, and so they would have that pool available to be able to continue offering those distributions, and it allows for a 10-year window of the education fund and the group health and life benefits to be able to make that balance.
Okay, thank you.
Are there any other questions or comments? Okay. What is the will of the committee, Representative Ruffridge?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would move House Bill number 21. Also referred to as 33-LS0245/alpha, be advanced from the committee with individual recommendations and attached fiscal notes.
Object.
Okay. Would you like to speak to your objection, Representative Prox?
There was some discussion on the fiscal note and how this actually would work in practice. If we want to let the Finance Committee or some other committee take care of that, actually I have no objection myself, but I just wanted us to stop and think about it. If we wanted to control that conversation, we would hold the bill and give the administration a ring.
Okay. Would you like to maintain your objection?
No, with that, I withdraw my objection.
Thank you. Linda, would you please call the roll?
Representative.
Oh, just a second, please.
Keep going.
No. Go ahead, Linda. Call the roll, please.
Representative Prox?
Yes.
Representative McCormick is absent. Representative McKay?
Yes.
Representative Hemshoot?
Yes.
Representative Story?
Yes.
Co-chair Ruffridge?
Yes.
Co-chair Allard?
Yes.
6 yeas.
Thank you. We'll take a brief at ease to sign the committee report.
Thank you. For the record, my name is Pat Pitney. I'm president of the University of Alaska. I really appreciate the opportunity to speak before the committee, and I think I've had a chance to work with and meet everybody on the committee, except for maybe Representative Hemshoot. And so I look forward to that opportunity when I get down there again soon. I'll try to keep up with Chad or have Chad keep up with me on this. One of the unique things about the university, and let's go to the next page, Chad, is we are a system that encompasses Votech, community college, all the way to the research university, economic development efforts, and PhD education. In other states, you have multiple systems. In our small state, we have one. We have three distinct universities, each with their own community campuses, and that allows us to serve the state from Ketchikan to Kotzebue. And I think when I talk with our community campus directors, I talk about their role as an advocate for the workforce and economic development of their communities. And of course, each of our three universities, main campus, you know, main universities have that opportunity for their areas throughout the state. And I think the biggest thing, the biggest takeaway is University of Alaska is not a university. It's the entire public higher education system for the state. We serve over 90% of students involved in higher education are within the University of Alaska system. Next page. Our board has as defined key priority focus areas as we move forward. And this is all under the umbrella of we must have fiscal stability for the institution. And our focus is on student enrollment in degree programs that are directed at Alaska's workforce. We're working on developing new workforce programs and advancing the existing workforce programs that are directed at the economic development opportunities that we have. An example there would be the work we're doing in the drones area. Arctic policy, research, and leadership. Teacher education, which you've heard a lot about, Alaska Native success, finance and business partnerships. And of course, an important one is increasing fisheries and ocean science presence in Southeast Alaska. And our longtime partnership with Southeast Conference, really made a big difference in the jobs challenge where they have a mariculture grant from EDA that is quite significant. And it was the longtime partnership of University of Alaska Southeast, as well as UAF Sea Grant Program and the industry and Southeast Conference. And last is, of course, business models for efficiency and modernization. So those are our guiding principles from the board focus areas. And that keeps me on target as we evaluate what is the, you know, where do we spend our management effort? Where do we spend our resources? How do we focus on moving the institution forward? Okay. Chad, next page. Shortly after I started, we did some research about how Alaskans felt about the University of Alaska. And 92% of Alaskans say the state needs the public university system. And 81% have an overall approval rating. Before I go any further, I'd like to stop for questions because I'm going to abruptly switch into COVID funding because that was a request of the committee.
Sure, just a second, please. Are there any questions for Ms. Pitney? We do. We have one from Representative Prox. Go ahead.
Yes, thank you. Through the chair, Ms. Pitney, you mentioned fiscal stability. Does that mean stability from the perspective of the legislature funding a consistent amount, or are you looking at diversifying sources of income? There's kind of two approaches to that.
Through the chair, Representative Prax, all of the above. It is, you know, the fiscal year we're working in today is the first year in 9 that the university system hasn't taken major state budget reductions, over $105 million over that period. That was significant. With that much in the state funding reductions, other areas suffered as well. So our focus is state fiscal stability, increasing enrollment so we get our tuition revenues back, monetizing our land and our assets, our research stability. I am proud to say that even before we got to the state, got to the a platform of stability at, from a state perspective, our research revenue increased. And, you know, most of our research revenue is federal, but we also have private revenue as well. But we're in a very unique position with our background in Arctic and climate research, but as well as resource development. So, and significant work with the Department of Defense. So I think that was the only bright spot that was on the horizon when I walked into this position. And, but it's, you know, it is all of the above. It takes all of those components to have the fiscal stability and for us to meet the workforce needs of the state.
Yes, thank you. And through the chair, do you have, is there a kind of a long-term plan published that would be available to us to look at to see how we fit into the bigger picture? And I guess with that, how the university fits into the bigger picture of the state.
So we do have a long-term look. It's something I'll provide at the finance committee of kind of the, from a revenue perspective, in terms of the, in our goals and measures, we have out year targets, out to 27. But it points to consistent funding at the state level for compensation and fixed costs. And then, focusing on enrollment and research for our growth areas.
Okay,
is that another question?
Well, just
yes, go ahead.
Follow up to that. Do I understand that that is in the documents for the Finance Committee?
Through the chair, Representative Pax, yes.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Okay, President Pitney, if you wanted to go on to COVID funding so you know the questions, you can.
So the are we on slide 6, 10?
Yes. Yes.
Okay. So in total, COVID relief funding from all sources was $88.8 million, and it was spread across 2020 and 2021 from three different federal acts. There was funding from the Actually, I was wrong. It's slightly more than $90 million, with 88 from federal, 3.8 from the governor's education relief funds, and 750,000 from communities and organizations. The next page, page 7, provides a breakdown, and of the funding that went directly to students. And the number of students that benefited. And see, 23 million went to more than 10,000 students.
I'm going to take just a brief pause. Does the committee members, anybody have a question? Doesn't look like it. Okay, continue, please.
So on institutional COVID relief funds is on page 8, and you'll see a breakdown of that $69 million and the source of that, and then the uses to the right. And I can answer any questions if anybody has any.
I don't believe there are any. If you could continue.
Okay. Now, going on to our enrollment this year, we last fall, we were expecting on a system-wide basis to be down between 5 and 6%. We saw a much better return in term in the fall with not quite flat, but only 1% down. And this spring, I'm happy to say for the first time in 10 years, we have a growing student enrollment. And we're seeing significant growth at our community campuses, technical schools, and career education. We have more students returning into face-to-face, but as we learn from our what we call the COVID rainbow, we also have more available online offerings than we did before COVID, and we'll continue to have more online. But our face-to-face presence has come back as well.
President Pitney, I'm going to interrupt you just for a second. When did you take over at the university?
August 1st of 2020.
Well, I'd like to say that you've done an outstanding job with your university and getting things back up and running in a positive direction. Congratulations on the increase of students. It's much appreciated throughout our entire state. Are there any questions for President Pitney? It looks like Representative Prox.
Yes, thank you. Through the chair, I'm glad to see the increase in enrollment and on the first part. Has the university identified what they did right?
Our focus was first and foremost fiscal stability and building back confidence and trust. And again, it comes down to the underlying or overarching need is fiscal stability. No surprises. We're going to get to it on a little bit further, but the work you're doing on the Alaska Performance Scholarship and the work that was done last year to create stability in that program is very appreciative, very, very important to the future workforce of this state. So, but that fiscal stability is absolutely number one. But then we had to let people know the programs that we have are here to stay. Yes, we have fewer of them, but the ones we have are here to stay and they're high quality. And you're going to get a great education here, and we're going to be responsive to the industry needs. We're going to maintain our focus on the high job demand areas. But it really is that stability and building back confidence and trust.
Thank you.
Let's see. Dual enrollment is a huge opportunity for the state and one that's moving, moving forward with enthusiasm from all parties, school districts, the university, and parents and students. We have 2,300 high school students. Our targets for 2027 are to have 3,600 high school students engaged in dual enrollment, and this is where they're getting college credits at the same time they're finishing their high school degree. Allows them to graduate with a baccalaureate degree in as few as 2 years. That would allow them, if they chose to go to the workforce or continuing on and getting their master's in what could be a 4-year time period. So it saves time for the student, but it saves money for the state as they're simultaneously going to high school and college.
Representative Rushing has a question for you.
Thank you, through the chair, President Pitney. Thank you for, I look forward to working with you as well. When you get down to Juneau at some point, please stop in. But thank you for being here. And my question is about dual enrollment, and fantastic to see it growing. I support 100%. I do worry about equity in the program. In my school district where I teach, it's funded 30% by the district, 30% by the university, and 30% by the student. Is that common across the state, or is that specific to each district? And I guess my concern is it available to every student across the state, every high school student?
So the it is very district. I'm sorry, through the chair, Representative Hemshoek. The ability for a student to participate and the financial agreement is district specific, and the districts drive that financial support. We have both the online Alaska Advantage opportunity, and we have other online opportunities. The Alaska Advantage is designed specifically for this dual credit market, and primarily UAF, but UAF also participates with courses on that. But a student can take any online, well, can take any offering at a university in a dual enrollment perspective on a case-by-case basis. And but it's up to the district what the share is. We also have actual physical middle schools, middle colleges. And those are in Mat-Su, Fairbanks, Anchorage. And I think more to come in other communities. And those middle schools are, again, a financial arrangement, and they're on a, I believe they're on a lottery basis in all instances, but I'm not positive on that.
Follow up? No. So we're going to Representative Prox.
Thank you. Through the chair, I'm having to think back over 40 years, so things might have changed since then. My end question is, does the university still maintain the quality or performance expectation for its degree? And to put that in context, when 40 years ago there were, if you will, the more advanced, academically challenging courses in high school, universities 100 level courses seem to be a repeat of those courses. And on the other hand, the university had makeup level courses to be able to qualify for the 100 level courses. Is that still the same, or how has the university sorted out the qualifications so that the students end up meeting the university standard in the end?
Through the chair, Representative Prox, that's a good question. I'm trying to find the right entry into this. Every student comes in either with a test score, well, they come in with test scores and transcripts. If they don't come in with a test score, then there's placement exams. And those placement exams, and they're much improved. They're much better at assessing where that student is. So those placement exams places the student in the right English literature and math programs. We still have developmental education. It is less. We have less folks, or relative to, now I'm going back to experiences in the 90s. Our developmental education requirement, the people who come in needing that, is less today than in the 90s through 2000s. But we still have it, and if necessary, a student comes in with that. With these middle colleges and dual enrollment, you know, we see students placed substantially higher. And it's, you know, so again, it is, and we know the student because they've interacted with us. So it's a much more seamless transition Again, very efficient. Did that answer your question?
That does. Thank you.
Representative Story.
Thank you. Through the chair, welcome. President Pitney, good to see you. So are you saying that they don't take the Accuplacer test anymore and they use a different placement test?
No, I think through the chair, Representative Story, they use Accuplacer, of course, ACT, SATs, and then other, I think there's a couple of other assessment opportunities, but Accuplacer is one of them.
Thank you.
And more accurate than, again, there was a reference to 40 years ago, more accurate than the mid-90s when I started working in this space.
Thank you. Okay, if you could continue on.
Great. So it's good news. We have a UA Scholars Award, which is a University of Alaska land-grant trust-funded scholarship to the top 10%. And this is one of our measures of, are we building confidence and trust? And we have 40% of the eligible scholars who have applied for the award. That's an 11% increase over 22. And I think this is that sign that we're building that confidence and trust back. On teacher preparation, we have all three schools of education's up and running. Most recently, UAA started their baccalaureate in early childhood education. That is getting significant growth, focused on the REEDS Act and that pre-K to three education. But all three of our programs are working together in what we call the Alaska College of Education Consortium. And one of the big things is we need more teachers. That means we need all three of our schools of education focused on getting enrollment and producing the best teachers we can for Alaska. Most recently, last year in the budget, there was $1 million added to provide for financial support. One of the big hurdles is in your last year, you have to student teach. Well, a lot of students work during their time in college. And when you have to student teach and take college classes to get through your last year of teaching and a lot of your clinicals for health are shorter than a year, but teaching is a semester based or a year long need. That financial support is helping allow people to not have that financial burden that often delays their ability to do their clinic or their internship. So very, very helpful. We're working on expansion in nursing. Again, that same pilot program for financial support for clinicals been very successful. Chad has numbers on those if you want the full breakdown of the number of students who've received that. And it kind of on a national context, nationwide enrollment is still decreasing, so it's very positive. Ours is increasing. And overall, our students graduate with less debt than students in other states. So good news story.
I apologize. Representative Ruffridge has a question for you.
Thank you, Chair Allard. And thank you for your presentation thus far, President Pitney. Certainly appreciated you taking the time to have conversation with me already this session and appreciate the work that you're doing with our university. Can you speak on the both the programs in teachers and nursing? Those seem to be hot topics in this legislative session for workforce. Are those programs at capacity? Or are there room for additional students to enroll in that currently?
In all of our teaching programs, there is capacity. And it's making teaching a sought-after occupation is important. But all of our education programs, we have capacity for more students and are working hard to recruit more students. We have a campaign, an advertising campaign. Maybe you've seen some of the ads that have come out over the past several months. We also have a website called teachalaska.org that provides the guidance for wherever you are, career-wise, age, degree, how do I become a teacher? It provides you a guide. For instance, if you're, I live in Nome, I have a baccalaureate degree in X, and I want to be, you know, and I want to get certified to become a teacher. How do I do that? And it walks you through how you do that, with the variety of programs that we offer across our three universities. The, focused on, if coming out of the military and I have these skills, how long would it take? The, we're also working hard with school districts on, thinking through the internship model, and that becomes a much stronger partnership with school districts, that those are in the development phase. There's a lot of work that has happened and is continuing to happen with the individuals who are paraprofessionals working on their teaching degree. So we're looking for avenues. On the nursing side, we are so over capacity. Not over capacity. We have so many more students than we have capacity for. And given the nursing shortage, our nursing faculty are, by definition, nurses. And we especially during COVID, where our faculty, we're looking at the other opportunities. So we've been recruiting to fill our faculty ranks back, and had to change our salary expectations for our nursing faculty so we could be at all in the market. Our nursing faculty, we have the exact numbers, and we can get them to you. But the number of new faculty, I think off the top of my head, I think we're at nine additional from where we were just a year ago. And so our focus is on refilling and adding capacity into our nursing programs. But even if we add all the capacity, we're still going to have a waiting list in nursing, and not just in the nursing area, but across the board in healthcare. In healthcare occupations, there's a need for over 6,000. They project a need of 6,000 healthcare workers across the state. So it is significant. And beyond nursing, we have several other health occupations. We have occupational therapy, radiology technicians. I should know more off the top of my head, but we graduate across all of our programs in the health arena about 750 a year. So and last year the state provided $3.5 million to both expand nursing, support the additional salaries that it would cost for the nursing, expand the nursing programs, as well as expand some of those allied health programs that we could do. And that has been very, very helpful. Again, it won't meet all of the need, but it's going to meet more of the need.
Thank you.
Representative Story, and then I think we need to get, we have a lot of slides, but continue with your question, please.
Thank you, Chair Allard. Through the chair, President Pitney, just wanted to talk a couple more, two more questions about the teaching program. One of them is, I think in the further notes, there was $1 million put aside for to help with internships and paying teachers. I'm wondering what the income threshold is to apply for that. I'm assuming it's awarded based on your income. And if not, please, if you could clarify that. And then I had one other question.
Through the chair, Representative Story, I'm going to see if my lifeline, Vice President Paul Lair, has that detail, and if not, we will get it to you.
Go ahead, Mr. Lair.
Thank you very much. Through the chair, I am looking at the website right now, trying to find that information for you. So I don't have it on the top of my head either. I apologize, but Ms. President Pitney said we'll get that for you. I will share that with Chad once I pull that up.
Mr. Lair, can you please put your name on the record and what department you
are? Oh, I'm sorry very much. For the record, Paul Lair, Vice President for Academic Students and Research. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, through the chair. One more question, and that has to do with how often do the teaching faculty reach out to the school districts to confer about what is needed in the Reads Act, the teaching the science of reading, also the assessments that the school districts are using. It's always been my hope that there's a strong partnership there, so when our teachers are coming out of the university, they're ready and prepared at our local school districts. So if you could tell me how often they meet and confer about that.
I'm more familiar with what we've been doing on the reading tab. There's been several conference specific to the reading where our faculty focused on the reading education are working with school teachers and the Department of Education on that. The assessments, our NCATE accreditation requires a tremendous amount of interaction between the school district leaders, our graduated teachers, and our departments on the assessment, and those assessments are very, very rigorous.
Thank you.
Thank you. Continue with your presentation.
Page 10 is just our current numbers, and well, I think it was as of December 22. So our current information, there's nothing really specific on that. We can jump to the next slide.
Representative Ruffridge has a question for you.
Oh, just a brief question on faculty. How many of those faculty members are tenured faculty versus adjunct faculty?
Through the chair, Representative Ruffridge, we have kind of, I would say, four categories of faculty. So we have the adjunct faculty, and we have full-time faculty, and within the full-time faculty, we have tenured track, and then non-tenure track, or not in a tenure line, you know, not in a line that would become a tenure faculty. And in terms of, we have just under 1,000 full-time faculty, and then the remainder would be adjunct. And I don't have the specific numbers of who's the number of tenure track, but those are numbers we follow all the time. I just don't know them off the top of my head. And we can get that breakdown if you need it.
Thank you.
Yeah, if that's possible, if you could send it to the committee members, that would be wonderful. Thank you. Continue. Do you have a follow-up? No.
So I wanted to jump on to the page 11 on the Alaska Performance Scholarship, and I mentioned this earlier in the presentation, but the Alaska Performance Scholarship is the best workforce program for Alaska, bar none. 80% of graduates from the University of Alaska are working within Alaska within a year of graduating. National statistics show that 80% of students reside within 100 miles of where they graduate from college. The more people we can get to come to one of our universities, graduate from one of our universities, it's 80% in our workforce. And the Alaska Performance Scholarships makes that very possible. The Department of Labor did a recent study, and they show that only 25% of the students who go out of state for college return and stay in Alaska. So, and what you're working on for the Alaska Performance Scholarship is hugely important to our work, our state's workforce effort. And I support it, and I thank you for the attention you're paying to it. We can go on to the next page if there's no questions. This is, an abrupt shift from the last topic, but this is the stability, fiscal stability issue. As you can see, our employee headcount follows our largely our state funding, because we are, as an organization, we are dependent on people for our success. So next page. I go into a couple of programs that are part of our 24 budget. And then cover some of the programs that we had for our 23 budget. And we're at, from a time check, Chair Allard, we're at 9:20. How much time would you like me to target? Because I can fit within, I could do 10 minutes or I could do 25 minutes.
You can go through your, you have until 10 o'clock with your whole presentation, Ms. President.
Oh, perfect. We'll make it just fine. So the WAMI program is our medical school program. The part of what's in our budget that's at House Finance right now is a small amount of state funding for what is required for the University of Alaska Anchorage portion of expanding WAMI from 20 students to 30 students. Also has a capital item of $2 million that is going to expand the clinical space that's required for that 20 to 30 expansion. And then very important to the program is base funding to the Alaska Commission of Post-Secondary Ed for University of Washington. And that funding pays the difference for students beyond in their first year. They're paying University of Alaska Anchorage tuition in the rest of the years of their program. They're paying out-of-state tuition at out-of-state medical tuition at University of Washington. That $1.6 million is for the additional 10 students, the difference in their in a student's in-state graduate tuition to the out-of-state medical school tuition, and it goes to the University of Washington. If students come back, that they keep that. If they do not come back to Alaska, they actually pay that back to the Alaska Commission on Post-Secondary Ed. So.
Representative Hemshoot has a question for you.
Thank you, through the chair. President Pitney, if the demand for more nursing program spaces is so high, This is, you know, this is aiming high, but should we expand WAMI to include nursing? Is there space in out-of-state programs, or are they facing the same challenges with finding instructors that we face?
Through the chair, Representative Hemshoot, other places are also experiencing challenges, but there are some out-of-state private providers that are working with some hospitals in the state. I mean, because the acute is so high. We just our board just approved a LPN program at University of Alaska Fairbanks to help meet the needs of Fairbanks Memorial Hospital, Bartlett, and Tanana Chiefs. So the biggest success factor is, again, hiring the faculty to teach it. So it's the Anchorage program for the 2 and 4. So Anchorage UAA has, and don't quote me, 8 or 9 2-year nursing programs throughout the state. Bethel, Dillingham, Kodiak, Juneau, and other communities. So those 2-year programs are on a cohort basis. And then in the Anchorage program, also on a cohort class basis. In Anchorage, they're running the 4-year Bachelor of Science program. And Anchorage also runs a 4-year Bachelor of Science program in Fairbanks. In addition to adding capacity in the 4-year program in Anchorage, they've gone from 16 to 24 students in Fairbanks. So there's significant work to add capacity. But again, it's based on that getting the faculty to teach it. And we're as we get normalized at the next expansion number, then we can think about expanding again. But we kind of have to do it stepwise.
Representative Prox, you have a question?
She asked my question.
Oh, there you go. Okay, go ahead, President Pitney.
Thank you.
So in the, I'm on page 14 now. In the budget that's in the House Finance, there is an continuation of funding for the drone program. And the intent of the drone program is to set Alaska as the first place in the nation to have commercial unmanned aerial vehicle enterprises. And what that means is we have to work with the FAA and work with our airports to develop the safety standards to allow simultaneous manned and unmanned flight in airspace, writ large. And so at the same time, we're doing research on how do we best use unmanned aerial vehicles for monitoring and assessing, whether it be coastal erosion, pipeline safety, searches, and delivery of supplies. So all of the components of that, including pilot training, because a unmanned aerial pilot has to be the same qualified pilot as somebody in the plane. That is moving well, and in the budget is $10 million, and we developed a proposal at the beginning of this, a 5-year, $100 million investment to put Alaska as the first in the nation, and Alaska as the most dynamic environment for testing, building and testing unmanned aerial vehicles and all of the systems that go along with those. And so there's $10 million in the governor's budget that added to the $20 million last year. And I would like to thank Representative Prax for his engagement in that program. We appreciate your support, advocacy, and monitoring of our progress. So that kind of covers beyond our salary and fixed costs, that covers the programs that are included in the budget. We had more program requests, but those are the programs that were included in the governor's amended budget. On page 15 is a list of the programs that investments were made last year, and there's a small write-up on each program on pages 16 and 17. And rather than me going through each of those, if we can take a few minutes on page 16 and a few minutes on page 16 for you to look at those, and if you have specific questions, we've covered a lot on the healthcare program already, covered some on the drones, but if you have questions on the other areas, between myself, Paul Lehrer, and Chad Hutchison, we would answer those.
Okay, we're going to start off with Representative Ruffridge and then Representative Prox.
Thank you, Chair Allard. And through the chair, very interested in the mariculture component of the workforce training program. I know that the state had received some grant funding, particularly in the area of mariculture, to expand some options for industry. Is that something that the university is partnering in, not only for the research end, but also could you describe what the training end of that looks like at the university to help with mariculture?
So, through the chair, Representative Ruffridge, there is a very, very strong partnership in mariculture. And there's multiple components of funding. First, the Southeast Conference successfully competed for one of the Build Back Better grants and received not quite $50 million to expand the industry through that competitive proposal. The state did put in a industry grant program last year, and then supported University of Alaska's education and research area. University of Alaska Southeast, and primarily the Sitka campus, but it's also includes Juneau and Ketchikan, have a fisheries tech and kind of introductory mariculture program to help people just at the very beginning of the process, you know, things like everything from boat safety to what are the permitting requirements to how do you actually focus on getting the seaweed to grow, where's the best places, what do you know about that? So it kind of covers that whole breadth. The Sea Grant program through University of Alaska Fairbanks is in most coastal communities throughout Alaska. And they are also very connected on the research arm of how does kelp grow best? What are the various factors that make that grow? So they're on the research side. And then, of course, Fisheries and Ocean Sciences, UAF's Fisheries and Ocean Sciences, with their research on things like ocean acidification, interaction of the ecosystems from the different types of fish, the different types, the amount of water temperature, the amount of how does the kelp CO2 contribute. So it's kind of soup to nuts, you know, boat safety to ocean currents and temperatures and acidification. The reason that the Southeast Conference could be so successful is this partnership with industry, Southeast Conference, university, and communities has been matured over the course of 10 or more years. And I think that, you know, I think that is a lesson learned for other industry areas like drones, like the drones where for us to be competitive in innovation hub type opportunities, it is that sense of long-term partnership from industry, communities, state, and university instruction all the way through research.
Thank you.
Long-winded answer, but I thought it was important.
Yes, thank you.
Representative Prox.
Thank you. Through the chair, I am happy to promote the drone program. I think that holds great potential for Alaska. In the alternative energy programs, the heavy oil, that is looking exciting. But there's another that the university is working on, coal gasification project. Do you have any thoughts on that, of where that's going? Coal gasification, they're proposing a plant that connects using coal as a feed source to make gas to run generation and then use the CO2 to supercharge a greenhouse. I guess that would be the word for it.
Through the chair, Representative Prax, I will have to get back to you on the specifics of that. I know Gwen Holdman will be, who is part of the task force, the energy task force. She's going to be our best source to go into specifics on that particular concept. But there are, I think one of the things we need to be thinking about is it's coal is a four-letter word in the whole energy space, but I think Alaska can make coal the cleanest fuel, can as clean as other fuels through technology that now exists. And I think that sheet, adding the sequestration, capturing the CO2 from coal use and reusing it in some way, shape, or form, I do think is an area that Alaska needs to really pay attention to. It's an opportunity, but I don't have enough specifics, and I encourage a conversation with Gwen Holdman, who can at least get you started.
Close enough. Thank you.
Thank you. President Pinckney, I'm going to liven this up just a little bit. I went through the presentation and I didn't see where the information was, but I did ask Mr. Hutchinson, because some of my constituents have been lighting it up in reference to your, I don't know if you call it a marijuana class, but could you talk a little bit on that just to bring a little excitement into this presentation?
I know there was a marijuana class. I think it was offered once. I don't think it's offered again. And, you know, it is an industry in the state. I don't know off the top of my head what the tax revenue is in Alaska on from the marijuana industry. Last I heard, it was 17 when I was watching it as Ledge Finance Director. You know, it's an economic piece of the state, and we do focus on the economy.
We do. And could you, for the public, because I don't know, could you explain to us how a class becomes a class through the process at the university, so they understand?
So the academic side is very much faculty monitored and faculty approved. So each university has a faculty senate. And if a department or a faculty wants to provide a new course, the most recent new course I was working on was on a new course in maritime training and capitalizing on the simulator, the maritime simulator in Ketchikan. And so every course that is proposed then goes up through Faculty Senate. It requires the Faculty Senate approval, curriculum approval, and then it goes into the provost and the chancellor's, probably just the provost for the final sign off. And then it goes into the registrar for scheduling, because there's, you know, what's your classroom, what's your technology needs, so that all of that can be accommodated.
Well, thank you for that. Are there any questions in reference to the, what's it called, cannabis class, Chad? Cannabis class.
Cannabis, that's correct. And it's not continued for the spring semester, is my understanding, because enrollment wasn't high enough.
Was there a lot of I'm just going to ask, did we have some participation that maybe warrants another time that it could be brought forward?
Chair Allard, participation as far as student participation in the fall semester? There was participation, but my understanding is, based on the question that you submitted to me, we conferred with Chancellor Parnell's leadership team, and they told us that there wasn't enough participation in order for it to be a viable class for spring semester of this year.
And then I just have one final question, maybe you can answer. What did the class teach? What was the behind it? How to run a business, or was it how to roll a joint? I mean, what did it actually... How did it work?
Chair Allard, all things industry related, as far as relevant laws and regulations for cannabis in Alaska, our unique nature when it comes to the nation. The state of Alaska, of course, has got special laws that make it different from other states in the United States. Banking, finances, and there is the grow opportunity and the biology of it too. So my understanding was it was all encompassing.
Great. Thank you. Are there any questions before we continue? Nothing. Okay. We are ready to continue.
So at page 18, this one is beyond the budget, our legislative priorities is first and foremost is in the middle there. Alaska Performance Scholarship and the Alaska Education Grant. The work you're doing to adjust the Alaska Performance Scholarship Fund so it can be awarded early is critically, critically important, and to adjust the size, you know, the amount for the scholarship was set more than 10 years ago, and over time the cost of tuition has gone up. So both of those are very important, but also thinking through the eligibility and the marketing of that is very important. So again, appreciate what you're doing on the Alaska Performance Scholarship. We wholeheartedly support it. The other area that's very important to the university and other entities is the extension of the Alaska's Education Tax Credit. Several years ago, that tax credit amount was changed and reduced. the extension is the most important process, but considering going back to prior education tax credit amounts is important as well. But again, the sunset date is the most important to change. And we have this session and next session. My preference would be that it is done this session, so we're not in the end game next session. It's very non-controversial to move that sunset date. And so that is what we're driving towards. And then last is the technical vocational education program. This is a Department of Labor training funded program. And it has been, it's more than a 20-year program, and it's up for reauthorization in fiscal year 25. And just advocate for moving that sunset date forward 5 or 6 years. This is a strong program. It allows for high-demand startup programs, community-specific, industry-specific programs. We've worked with Department of Labor over time and very much focus on those things that are going to be direct for employment. But through the chair, I have one question. Is that, I'm not sure that a bill has been introduced on the TVEP extension, but I might be wrong. Maybe Director Hutchison can speak to it.
There has been. Do you want?
Okay, good.
Yeah, my understanding, there has been a bill submitted at this point in time, and that's where it stands. I think Representative Carrick has presented this.
Thank you.
On page 20, we've already covered that. Oh, I'm sorry. On page 21.
Oh. President Pitney? Through the chair, this is Vice President Paul Lair. I do have the answer to the question asked earlier about the teacher practicum in pilot program, if I may.
Go ahead, Mr. Lair.
For the record, Paul Lair, Vice President for Academic Students and Research, University of Alaska. Replying through the chair to Representative Story's question, the criteria are very basic. That is to say, a student must be in good academic standing, eligible for financial aid. This is an initial licensure program at either the baccalaureate or the graduate level. And basically, they have to not be currently teaching. They have to be in that initial licensure program. We do have priority for people who are Alaska residents, who are in good academic standing, as I said, who are, intending to work in rural Alaska is an area of prioritization for us in an Indigenous district or school. And then having support from the district before they go into place. So basically, all students are eligible. Again, it's $30,000, including tuition and a $10,000 stipend for the students during that teaching year. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Representative Story, would you like to respond?
Yes, follow up through the chair. Dr. Lair, is there a good response to that? I know it just got up and running this fall. Can you let me know how many people are taking advantage of that?
Yes, through the chair, Paul Lair, Vice President for Academic Students and Research, Representative Story. With the money that we have allocated, it's over 30 students who have been awarded that award, and that takes us to $1 million. There are 33 students or so. We are also looking to supplement that with some of our internal foundation type monies, and so I think we were able to up the number close to 40 students who are participating this year. But thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Representative McKay. Did you have a question?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Through the chair, very quickly, President Pitney, I'm really glad that you're on board and wish you all the success leading our university. I kept waiting for the discussion to come today, but it apparently hasn't. So I just want to be clear on what's happening or what happened with our teacher program accreditation at UAA. Several years ago, I understand we lost accreditation in that program. I was told that it was just, we just didn't fill out some papers and the teachers didn't lose any quality. The students, I should say, didn't lose any quality because of it. Then I heard that everything had been straightened out and we had been reaccredited. Everything was great. And then I recently heard, oh, no, it's not. We're still not accredited. So maybe you could, for the record, give us just a brief history there and where do we stand? Are we accredited or not? And what's your way forward there? Thank you.
Through the chair, Representative McKay, my hope before I finish in this role is that this question doesn't come up, that we have it settled forever. So the University of Alaska Anchorage, an initial licensure education program, did lose accreditation in 2019. The choice at that time was because it was in the very financial turbulent time, was to drop those programs. Okay. They're specialized accreditation on, and we have about 80 programs across the institution that have a specialized specific program accreditation. All three of our universities are fully accredited and have been fully accredited and maintain that accreditation. And so this specific program accreditation, those programs were eliminated. Again, it was in that very tumultuous financial time. The accreditation process is very much a paperwork process, but it also is an external validation of quality. And so if you're not putting forward the information for the external group to validate your quality, doesn't mean that your program's not quality. It's just, it wasn't validated. So that program, those programs and were eliminated. All other programs remain fully accredited. So it's just those specific ones. The program that we started up, that the board approved last year at this time, the bachelor degree in early childhood education, and why I advocated and why the board approved it is because we had an early education program at the 2-year level that with the student enrollment and tuition, we could move financially effective to the 4-year program. The program was designed in very close collaboration with the Department of Education, and it had to be approved by the Department of Education to go forward, to allow for teachers to then receive their certificate in Alaska. At the same time, to get that external validation, the program has to operate for a number of years before that external accreditation validation can come through. So they're in a provisional period until that time. But the students who are in that have the opportunity, the Alaska opportunity through the Department of Education to be fully qualified to be, have certificates in Alaska. And then once the, once that external validation happens, then those, then that, those students, even if they've graduated before that external validation, those students then would be eligible for other, you know, where that accreditation transfers.
Thank you.
So we're just in an in-between process.
Is there a follow-up?
Okay. Yeah, just very quick follow-up. Thank you for that explanation. It's obvious why I didn't understand what was happening. When you say state Department of Education, I think you mean State Department of Education. State. Right. Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you. So if we could wrap up the presentation, President Pitney, and then I'm going to let the with your last comment, and then I'm going to let the committee members make a closing comment.
Thank you, Chair Allard. The my last, I want to make sure everybody takes a look at slide 21 about our land grant and the important progress. The big key here is this is an excellent opportunity, but it's going to take 5 to 10 years before we actually materialize funding because of the work we have to do with Department of Labor or Department of Natural Resources, and then from there the Bureau of Land Management. So it's going to take us a while, but every day it's top on our list to work. It's kind of like planting a tree, you know. It's going to be, if it takes 20 years to grow, you better plant it today. So with that, I'm very pleased that I had the opportunity to address this group. Happy to offer Director Hutchinson's follow up on any of the items that we missed. And when I get down there again, I'd be happy to meet with anybody on subjects of interest to you. And again, I appreciate your support of the University of Alaska and the compliments I've received.
Thank you.
Very much honored.
Mr. Laird, thank you for joining us. Thank you, President Pitney. Thank you, Chad. And I'm going to just start off with, do you have a comment or anything that you would like to? Thank you. Representative Hemshoot, do you have a closing comment?
I do. Thank you for the opportunity to comment. And through the chair, thank you, President Pitney, for being with us. One thing we didn't get to and that wasn't in the presentation that I would like more information on is the Alaska Statewide Mentor Project, which is somehow still related to the university, used to receive state funding. I'm not sure that it does now. And got a shout out on national radio yesterday. So it's something that we're doing well in the state, and I want to make sure that that's protected and possibly expanded. And then my final comment would be, we need as many teachers as we can produce. So whatever it takes, I see, you know, the $1 million to help with the internship at the end. I think there's more we could be doing to recruit and to recruit more people into the program, to graduate more teachers, and then to support the teachers who are out in the field. So thank you.
Thank you. Representative Story.
Thank you. Through the chair, again, President Pitney and Mr. Layer, I just so appreciate your efforts on behalf of the workforce here and students coming out of high school, and I appreciate it. I'd be interested to know sometime more about our deferred maintenance and your plan to be tackling that. And then also, when we talk about the land grant, I would think it would take a staff person to be working on that. Just curious about who's marshaling those efforts in your budget. And then the other question I had was, you had said you had put forward some initiatives that were not in the governor's budget, and I would appreciate hearing what those were. You can, in the further document, because I don't think we have time right now, but I am curious about that.
Yes, if, Mr. Hutchinson, if we could get that information back to the committee members, that'd be greatly appreciated. Representative Prox.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. I'm pleased with the direction the university is taking, and I don't know if it's a fair statement, but it seemed several decades ago when it was just a more passive approach. The economy went up, some things changed towards the university, the economy shifted, they changed things back, and now there seems to be more of an active approach to controlling their own future, and that's good. I'm especially pleased about the focus on workforce development, because that will help us with the cash flow problems. And in any business, you have to focus on cash flow, and so that's a good thing.
Thank you. And my co-chair, Representative Ruffert?
Just to thank you for being here, and thank you for your overview, and appreciate the time.
Thank you. And Representative McKay?
Thank you very much, both of you, and Chad, for being here with us. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you very much for being here with us and for your presentation. That concludes our business today. On Wednesday, the committee will be hearing public testimony on HB 75 and a second presentation on HB 105. Seeing no other business before the committee, we will adjourn. Let the record reflect that it is 10 a.m.
I'm Chair Allen.